So we are starting with our first panelist, which is Juri Engström from Finland. He holds his master's degree in social science from the University of Helsinki and is now a PhD candidate at the Lancaster University Management School. And we invited him as co-founder and chairman of Yaiku, one of the first two important microblogging tools. And he has over a decade of experience in mobile services and communication industry. And so his microblogging tool, it's Yaiku, is some kind of mobile conversation tools where you can share presence and especially you're available at locations. And we are very interested in how this shifts the way of communicating in public space and how people build communities on field. So I now invite Juri Engström to this stage to talk about Yaiku.
Thanks, Danielle. I think this is the first time that I've been preceded on stage by 8 remote-controlled umbrellas. So, get started, I do have some slides. I don't want to bore you too much with them, but I thought I'd kind of run you the gist in case you're not familiar with Yaiku and then sort of engage in conversation. That's why I put this subtitle here as well. It's sort of what is microblogging and especially what it could be in the future, since I'm perhaps more interested in your views than my own. Let's see. To get started, I just wanted to briefly explain one way of, sort of conceptualizing this very odd notion of this microblogging and what it refers to. Yes, I see the umbrellas are listening. Looking at what blogs are, since I thought most of you are probably already familiar with blogs, and then sort of looking at what I think is a particular feature of these microblogs, which is that they appear as a sort of disruptive force to the traditional way of blogging. So starting with this question, what could disrupt blogs? And this is just a way, maybe it also shows a little bit of the fact that I do have a sort of side project in academia as well, sort of thinking about this stuff, is, you know, what requirements of this sort of disruptive innovation are. First of all, it should be something that's a lot simpler than what's already out there. And second, it wouldn't hurt if it was radically cheaper as well. And then this third point, that it should free people from the need to go to an inconvenient place. Now, there's a sort of hallmark example of this being the digital cameras that free people from the need to go to Photoshop to get their pictures developed. I just wanted to look at quickly at these three criteria as more of a sort of thought experiment than anything very serious, just to see what we would come up with if we compared these new microblogs with traditional blogs. So I'll start with this question of, you know, is there a way to do something that might be simpler than blogs? And this is essentially what microblogging is about, is that let's just do something that's a very short blog post. And the interesting part about that is that I do have a blog as well, and what I find is that every time I want to post something on my blog, I need to think about it for a while because it feels like I need to write something that's larger than life. And there's a threshold to that, which we're, you know, in the end, I end up not blogging very much because I simply don't have the time to formulate my ideas deeply enough. Whereas this stuff seems to be the kind of content that you can generate on the fly without really having to think about it too much. So just as an example of something that I posted, I think on April 10th this year, was something like this, a very short one-liner text. But then the people who know me can sort of imagine the context behind this, even if it's such a short post. And the interesting part is that when you sort of start piling these posts up into a series, you get a kind of history of, like in this case, Tuesday, 10th of April, 2007 of my life, which happened to be a particularly important day in my life. And this is a kind of record of that day. The other interesting thing about this is that what we noticed pretty quickly is that it's really not about people just having a monologue with themselves, but it's rather about these green things here. It's about the comments. So you're really sort of not only living through it yourself, but you're also giving your friends a way to participate in your life, even though you might be physically disconnected from them. And this is interesting because we do spend most of our time physically disconnected from the people that we care the most about. And then sort of what we're trying to do is sort of contextualize that and give you ways to kind of customize it and make it into a sort of one point of presence on the web. So you can even pull in sources if you're online a lot from other sites that you might be using and sort of just aggregate those all into one stream where people can follow you and they can decide which of your feeds they subscribe to. Now, one of the new things that we just put out that I just wanted to throw out quickly here was we also realized that there's quite a few people who are not so interested in just publishing their own lives, but who are rather interested in joining a group that's having a conversation about something. So it made sense to enable people to also create streams where multiple people can post to. So we ended up calling these channels. And so this is something that's new and that we're just now doing, where you can also sort of pull out widgets and put them on your own site. And indeed, I just went to visit this exhibit here in Ars Electronica too, where there's an Ars Electronica channel, that just kind of shows the different ways that this kind of stuff, when it's a platform with APIs, it becomes malleable and people can just sort of put it to their own uses and their own purposes. It's no longer what we originally thought it would be. But coming back to this first question, is something that can be simpler? My answer would be yes, just based on my own experience, because it seems like this is stuff that it is actually a lot easier to post and read this stuff. It's much quicker. Then this question number two is there something that could be actually cheaper than blogs? It's a really tough question to answer, and my answer to that actually used to be for a while that no, it's impossible to create anything that's cheaper than blogs because most blogs tend to be free. How can you create something that's cheaper than free? And it wasn't really until an economist friend of mine sort of pointed out, well, you got to think about the way price is constructed on the market, where price is always a function of supply and demand. And if you have something that's very rare, it tends to have a very high price. Whereas something that's abundantly available, the price tends to fall to zero. So if you think about it from that sort of those goggles in mind, I think an interesting part that also differentiates these microblogs from traditional blogs is that because the content is so short and it's mainly text, it can travel to many, many different devices, terminals, mobile terminals, as well as sort of other existing software that already exists online. So you're not just restricted to stuff that's happening on the web, but you can also post by SMS from your phone or using these mobile clients. We just recently launched this instant messaging integration because they're kind of like IM messages, so they kind of, these same posts can travel to IM. And really the API is the key here, because what we've seen is it's just amazing how quickly other people, once you give them the tools, will develop their own applications and integrate with Google, Facebook, create Windows apps, Macintosh OS X apps, and even some large companies like Nokia, who've then come along and create their own software that is embedded in their phones. So in this sense, you know, looking at it from this perspective, it seems like this kind of thing is indeed more abundantly available. You can use it from a plethora of different devices and channels that aren't available in traditional blogs. So this sort of results me in sort of checking this box as well. Actually, a very concrete example of this price question here that just recently came up was a teacher who contacted us who was organizing a project with about 70 different schools around the world where the students were working on projects on global warming. And basically, his interest in using the JICA channels was that some of those schools were in developing countries where they actually did not have very good internet access from computers, whereas what they did have was text messaging. So turns out there are still places where, you know, in order to participate in this kind of conversation, you know, computers and traditional internet through the web is still too expensive, and you need something that's really cheaper, cheap mobile phones, simple text messages. And I think this third question, and you know, you guys already know the answer that I have to this, but I'll just kind of use it as a way to, for a minute, just describe what we're doing, especially with regard to this mobile software, what I think is sort of perhaps the interesting angle to this conference in the whole. We've developed a client that you can download to your Series 60 phones that sort of turns your contact list to life. What it does is, when I used to work at Nokia before I co-founded JICA with my friend, and we did some studies there, and a couple of things that came up. One was that the two questions people tend to ask most often when they use mobile phones, when they start a conversation, when they phone someone up, is first, some way of asking, are you free? Are you able to talk right now? And the second is, where are you now? Or indeed, where are you going? So it turns out there are ways that you can answer this question. I'll come back to that side of it already, because the phone does know that stuff about you. It knows the ring profile of the phone that can be used to decipher if your phone is on silent, whether or not you're currently available. And we're using cell tower positioning to let people freely name these cells so that you have the option to actually share your location automatically as well. So what you're seeing here, this is a screenshot from my girlfriend's, or what I see from her, what she's sharing with me. And, you know, right now we have a small child, and I'm traveling a lot. I do notice that it becomes quite important to me to, you know, have this sense of, even though I'm not constantly calling her, though I, you know, probably will call her after this panel just to say, hello, what's up? You know, just a glance at my phone to know that she's okay. And I know that, you know, for instance, is she traveling right now? Is she home? This kind of stuff really starts to make a difference, especially when we have family members or other colleagues that we care about who might live in different time zones or that we might not see that much. So another interesting use, it's just for myself, it's just my dad. He's, you know, 60 years old. Does not use the internet in the sense of posting on Flickr or having a blog or anything like that. You know, he uses email and maybe does an occasional Google search, that's about it. But by the mere fact of having his phone on, you know, my parents are divorced right now, so I don't really see him that much. But I have this strange connection to him because I do know that, for instance, he's been recently traveling in Italy, even though I haven't really had that much of a conversation with him. And that kind of gives me a nice feeling because, you know, at least I sort of have a connection to him, and that oftentimes gives us something to talk about. So it's something I've been calling the social peripheral vision. It's kind of like, you know, giving you this radar into your social network. And in addition to that, you have this way of sort of responding very quickly to things that people are doing. And it becomes a way to also coordinate your routes and who you meet in urban space. You end up with something like this in my case, where I try to post on my blog at least once a week, but I constantly have this nagging feeling that I'm not posting enough. I post maybe once a day on Flickr, but I notice that I'm doing this maybe once an hour on average when I'm awake. Not always, but definitely more often than I'm blogging. And it, you know, there are cases like this is from the day we launched this map thing, and where people, you know, go off. This guy obviously didn't know that he was being watched by about 40,000 people on our front page that night, but he took it well. And this is just something that I've recently noticed now that we've started to have more users. This is something I posted a week ago where I was getting very frustrated at not being able to find decent-looking baby clothes, where, you know, within, you know, a matter of minutes, I ended up getting advice from people I don't really know, but who definitely knew better than me where to find baby clothes in Helsinki and who'd had this same problem and who, you know, found ways to solve it. And this was extremely helpful to me. So it's interesting to see where this goes, but right now it seems like I think there's way more to kind of discover in this third option here of the fact of having this available on mobile devices. This is another take at it, just quickly. Think about things like MySpaces or, you know, even Facebook right now. And I do think there's sort of, if you compare to traditional web communities, what you're seeing micro-content doing here is it's available everywhere because it's on your phone or whatever you're on, if you're on your instant messenger, so on. You can get it. You don't need to go to the web. The second point is that it's consumed on the move. It's kind of like what Starbucks did to coffee shops, which is sort of a bad thing, but it's also an interesting thing because it turns this content into something that's, it's like, you know, coffee used to be the same where you went to the coffee shop. I know there are good coffee shops in this country. And you sort of had this social occasion happening in there. You sat down, you had it with your friend. Whereas with what Starbucks came along when they invented this format for coffee was basically turn coffee into a mobile experience where you walk into the shop, you got your latte, and you picked it up, and you went out, and you sort of consumed it on the move, and when you were finished, you threw it away. And turns out people ended up doing that more and more, and, you know, you look at the consumption of coffee, and it's just been, you know, shot up drastically after Starbucks was introduced. And the same elements seem to be in place here, where it's something that's consumed on the move, short bursts, and it's you find yourself using it continuously. And interestingly enough, also, what's not on here, but the value of these posts tends to degrade more quickly over time. So I still get comments on blog posts that I posted like 2 years ago, whereas the stuff that I post on Jaiku, you know, it tends to be outdated, you know, in a matter of a couple of hours. This is just something that someone sent to me recently, so I thought I'd put it here. So I thought it was kind of odd. Some ways to follow me. This means I'm finished with my presentation. I just wanted to throw up some of these next steps, which really talks more about the future, which is what can we do with this, where is it evolving, and some of the stuff that we're working on right now is first of all, there's a lot of talk about being able to not just do text, but also other forms of media like photos, maybe even enclosures for things like music, video. Other thing is that it might be interesting through the APIs to not just follow people, but also machines or physical objects. Like one of our developers is working on a thing so you could add a tram stop or a bus stop as your friend because the schedules are online, and so you could kind of check when the next tram is coming by just glancing at your phone. So this idea that it's perhaps not just humans who can have this presence that you can follow. Third point, this federation is a pretty obvious one. There's a few of these services out there. It would be nice if they could all talk to each other rather than having these silos like we have in instant messengers. The Open Social Graph kind of links to that. It's something I'd recommend looking up on the web. It's something that's recently been posted. Won't talk about it now. Finish off with this idea of FaceRank, which is just a play on Google's PageRank, which means essentially you tend to get a lot of updates if you have a lot of people you follow. And they generate a lot of content. Some of that content's generated automatically. It's just a way too much information. It's information overload. So I think one of the cool things is figuring out algorithms or ways to sort out the irrelevant information and only display the relevant updates to you at that moment based on social proximity, maybe physical location. So if you get something from someone who's close by, that might be more relevant right now. And maybe tastes, preferences, interests. So I see a lot of opportunity there. I think I'll just leave it here and open it up for discussion. Thanks very much for listening. Are there any questions?
Yep.
How do you avoid spamming on an hourly basis, is the question. Well, in our case, if you wanted to spam me on an hourly basis, I'd need to first subscribe to your updates. If I don't subscribe to you, you'll find it's very difficult to spam me. You can try to believe we get comment spam, so people will go and they will add spam comments, just like on blogs and so on, and we employ just the same ways to deal with that as blogs do, where, you know, we have a system that tracks for spammers and people can also mark comments as spam. Any other questions? Yeah,
there. Could you say something more about the algorithm for social proximity? You just mentioned it as a concept, but I would be interested in more detail.
Sure. Yeah, if I revealed all my secrets, I'd have to kill every one of you. I wish I knew, man. It's something that I think's just recently come up now in just at least the way that I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around this, which is, like, for instance, we do notice that, see, I don't think I've met you before, so I don't have a very good idea whether your updates would be relevant to me. But I do see that there's Andy Smith is right there, and there's Nadia, who I know, who are my friends, whose updates I do follow. So if it turned out that both Andy and Nadia had marked you as their friend.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. Awesome. So that means I'd probably, see, look, I already got a recommendation that you might be someone relevant to me. So that social proximity right now, that just there put me like two steps closer to me, my social network. So I think social proximity in this case means, you know, how many shared connections would you have? Does that make sense? Cool.
Can you not get so overloaded by other people's small things in their life that you can't have a life? Is that?
There were ways
that my friends are so drunk tonight. I'm busy being drunk myself.
So the problem of just getting all a shitload of crap that you don't want to look at.
But it means that you're not getting on with your own life if you're just caring too much about other people's life.
So wait a minute. Are you suggesting that I don't have a life? That maybe this is the reason that I'm developing this service? But wait, I'm not alone. I think other people have the same problem. I think it has a lot of sides. Not all the sides are good. There is a problem of overload. There is a problem of irrelevance. There is a problem of getting hooked on it to the point where your girlfriend gets angry at you just, you know, always typing away at your phone and not concentrating on what's going on in face-to-face life. There are better sides too, some of which I try to show here. It's like ways to, like, discover. I already know a bunch of people at this conference that I'm probably going to meet who I've never met before, but who I've just connected through this kind of services. So, you know, responsibility always ends up lying with the person and how you use the technology. And our responsibility, of course, is to listen to people and watch intently and observe and figure out what are the better affordances that we can build in, such as one of the things we ended up doing is that you can unsubscribe from different feeds of people. And there are things like you can lie about your location. There's lots of stuff that we've ended up having to build in there just because we see there is a need for it, even though it might not make sense initially. Not a very precise answer, but anyone care to pick up from there? Are we done? Yeah? Okay, so the question was, can you set your profile as private? And answer is yes, you can. In that case, only the people who you add as your contacts would be able to see your feeds. Yeah? Okay. Looks like we're exhausted. Thank you.
So thank you very much for this inspiring talk, and if there are any further questions or if you like to see and visit or even post on our Ars Electronica Pixel Spaces channel, you can visit with us after this panel, the Ars Electronica Pixel Spaces exhibition. It's quite next door in the Marienstraße 10, and there we have some kind of display about this Jaiko channel with where you can download your software if you have a compatible device and join the post of other people.